Hey everyone, and welcome to the Madhouse Podcast. My name is Ray. This is my podcast. Now, before I get started, let's talk about what the Madhouse Podcast is, and maybe I can give you a better understanding of why I am doing this. So, Madhouse Podcast is a very general podcast with a heightened focus on mental health and the things that are important to me. This is including, but not limited to, sexual identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, coping, gaming. I mean, it's kind of all over. This is a podcast that I'm making for me to help me organize my thoughts. I used to make a lot of podcasts in the past, one of which, the one that I miss the most, is the one that I used to work on with a friend of mine called Nerdgasm for Sauce. That was a gaming podcast all about gaming news and what is new and in the gaming world, and it was so fun, and it gave me something to look forward to. It was beyond... It was beyond anything that I could really describe to someone, because I just loved it so much. In this first episode, I wanted to talk about trauma response and some of the issues that I had being a peer and learning some of the things that I had about myself while I worked as a peer, and how I've developed trauma responses to a lot of the things that I dealt with, as well as some other different things in between that time. But before we get into that, make sure that you subscribe to this. I would really appreciate it. And we'll be right back. So you're listening to a podcast, right? And you're really, really into it. But doesn't it suck so much when it stops you for some 30 to like 2 minute ad? And I know what you're thinking, you know, why don't they just remove ads? Well, the thing is that like content creators like me, like many other people out there, need to make money so we can continue doing what we love to do and providing you the entertainment that you love to hear. So, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, and guess what? You can get all of my episodes 1 week before anyone else, and they're ad-free. Hear that? 1 week before everyone else, and ad-free. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So just hit that subscribe button. Oh, and also, don't forget to share this with everyone. Now get back to the show. We got a lot more to talk about. And we are back. So, if you don't know what it is to be a peer is, in layman's terms, a peer is a therapist who doesn't have a degree. A peer is a person who has gone through the mental health or addiction side of mental health, who has gone through training and who becomes certified in order to work and assist others who have experienced similar past. Now, I'm not going to put this very lightly. It's fucking hard work. It is really, really hard work. And there is a lot of thank yous in the end, but it is a lot of hard work. And most of it, most people should not do. This type of work will bring you to hell and back. And it's very easy to ignore a lot of the traumatic things that can happen to you while working as a peer. One of the first things I've ever had to deal with was convincing a person to unlock the door because they brought in an entire block, a kitchen knife block set, into the crisis respite home that I worked at. They brought the entire knife block into the bathroom. At the time, I didn't realize how awful and traumatic of an experience that conversation was. It got to the point where, I mean, I knew that I was doing the wrong thing. But I was so afraid that this person was going to hurt themselves. I knew on every level that the coworker who was in charge of the house at that time had been handling the situation entirely wrong. And I knew that the coworker of mine had pushed this client to that point. This was one of the first clients that I've ever worked with. And I think it actually was the first client that I did work with. it was very difficult. One of the main takeaways from that first experience that I learned very quickly was to never reintroduce trauma to your client, one, but also be prepared because you never know what may happen. You never know, especially if you're working in a crisis respite, you never know. If you are working as a peer that's out on the road and you visit other people's homes, which with COVID, I'm not really sure how that affected the entire peer atmosphere. But that is it's quite a different story. But the crisis respite, you get the clients at their worst and they leave a little bit better. It's not a super thankful job, for sure. My biggest and most difficult thing to deal with while I was a peer was the concept of myself as a peer. I know that I have a mental health disorder. I know that I have several, which fully transparent here. I am diagnosed schizophrenic, manic depressant, high anxiety disorder, as well as ADHD. There's a lot that overlaps, and a lot that I tried to have expunged from my record, but that is very difficult. That is very, very difficult work to try and do. So I know my mental health disorders. I don't know theirs. And it's really hard sometimes, unless you are being given that information, it's really hard to remember that people that you work with are mentally ill. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to tiptoe around the topic. Call it politically incorrect if you want. I'm very experienced in this field. I'm very experienced in treating my mental health, and I'm relaying my experience which is what I was trained to do as a peer. I'm going to do my best to avoid anything horribly offensive, but I can't be held to that type of standard because I am a person who knows my limits, and I'm a flawed person. We're all human. We definitely are not perfect. I'm certainly not perfect. But I have to do my best to relay an accurate description of my work history and my mental health in order to give a good hour and 15 minutes of listening time for people who might be listening. So back to the topic at hand. It's easy to forget that your mental health is different from your coworkers. It's even easy, dare I say, it's easy. It's easy to forget that your coworkers are mentally ill. And most people who you talk to every single day, someone has something in their brain, which is my term of saying that they have a mental health disorder. Most people in this country, dare I say in this world, have a mental health disorder, and probably a lot of them are undiagnosed. But go and get diagnosed. There's nothing wrong with knowing the name. And there's nothing wrong with knowing the diagnosis so you can figure out why your brain works a certain way. That's what I did. So, and I don't mean to laugh at this topic. It's not super funny. I'm not a super funny person. I try and make things lighthearted and easier for people to understand. I'm not this eloquent when I speak regularly. I get very tripped up, and the topic of this episode is trauma response. And the thing that is really important to me for people to understand is that with certain people, I can talk as if nothing is wrong with my head, as if it doesn't take every ounce of my fucking being to get out one sentence. And for others, I halt at every word. I have to construct my sentence and then force myself to say it. And for those of you who have never experienced that, it's hell. It makes you feel childish. It makes you feel like you're stupid. It makes you feel like you have no idea what you want. It's embarrassing and it's frustrating. Fortunately, I have a very understanding partner, and I have a very understanding boss. The people who I keep in my life understand my mental health disorders, and they understand these types of things that I need them to understand in order to continue the friendships and the work relationships and everything that we have, because this is not easy, and I cannot express how hard it is to have a trauma response that disables me from talking, or at the very least, disables me from forming sentences. One of the things that I have learned through peer work, going back to the peer work, one of the things that I learned, besides the people who you work with, are you learn a lot about what the system thinks of you and how to manipulate the system a little bit to benefit your clients. You learn about what doctors think of you as a peer and as a person with mental health disorders. You learn very quickly that you're going to need someone to talk to, someone who experiences the same stuff that you do, in order to get through your day. And I was advised to see a therapist almost immediately after I started working, because my supervisor knew that it was going to be a very hard job. And it was a hard job for everyone who worked there. It wasn't just hard for me. We had a plethora of people, all of which were diagnosed with mental health disorders. But there were people who would lie about their homeless status and lie about being a pedophile, a sex offender. We had people who had to lie about warrants on their warrants of arrest. We had, because we were a safe haven, and we were supposed to be always understanding, always forgiving, always anything. And all of us came from a different background. And I can say for myself, and I feel comfortable speaking for one other individual who I worked with, who we overlapped our shift a lot, and I de-escalated her a lot, because she would often be in tears by the time that I got in. She would barricade herself in the office because of some clients. And I didn't find this out until much later. But she had been raped. And you wouldn't know it by looking at her, because her trauma response to this sexual assault was sunshine and rainbows and high energy, and I'm here for this and I'm ready. And I didn't even find out what had happened to her. She didn't tell me what had happened to her until a few months before I left. I just thought that she was having a bad day. She always told me that she felt uncomfortable around certain people. If the person was homeless, she felt very uncomfortable. As a program, we were not authorized to serve the homeless. That is just a company policy. That's not a prejudice. But it was a policy put in place by the donors, because it was a nonprofit, so we were able to have our own policies about that. And our donors did not want us serving the homeless, so that's exactly what we had to do. And it's not the most delightful conversation to have, really. It's a really, really messed up, awful conversation. But the conversation started turning really, really aggressive when we were going to start billing to Medicaid. In almost 2 years that I had worked there, at the respite house, we hadn't billed Medicaid for anything. The entire house, it was just, we were basically draining the bank on this house. And it was one of my jobs while I was working there, was keeping track of the finances and all of that stuff. But it was getting to the point, because these houses don't typically start billing until a few years in. It was getting to the point where we were going to start billing, and then we were going to have to not only start taking sex offenders, pedophiles, homeless. There were going to be almost no limitations on the clients that we had to accept. And that was really, really difficult for a lot of us to swallow at the time. With that, I'm going to take a break. I need to hydrate, and I will be back in a minute. So you're listening to a podcast, right? And you're really, really into it. But doesn't it suck so much when it stops you for some 30 to like 2 minute ad? And I know what you're thinking, you know, why don't they just remove ads? Well, the thing is that like content creators like me, like many other people out there, need to make money so we can continue doing what we love to do and providing you the entertainment that you love to hear. So do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, and guess what? You can get all of my episodes 1 week before anyone else, and they're ad-free. Hear that? 1 week before everyone else and ad-free. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So just hit that subscribe button. Oh, and also, don't forget to share this with everyone. Now get back to the show. We got a lot more to talk about. And we're back. So, after finding out the news that we had to start serving everyone, because now we were billing, and we had to serve everyone, there was a serious shift that occurred in the place. Like I said previously, one of my coworkers who had been raped started looking for new work. She could not be around homeless. And she couldn't be around sex offenders. It was around this time that we started getting like really condescending emails from our supervisor that was kind of pointing us at being like extremely biased in how we aren't doing our job because something about like because we have our bias against these people, maybe we shouldn't be fit to be peers. And it was a lot, because like everyone has their bias, and that's one of the things that we learned as peers, that we all have a bias. It's just the way that it is. And it was really frustrating to hear that from our boss, who prior to this billing situation, we had always been on the same page regarding this. So it was really, really hurtful. And what are we supposed to do? And, episode one, I was molested. Something that I think about every day. And how am I supposed to deal as a what do you even call it? A molestation survivor? What do you call that? As a survivor of trauma. Well, that's a good one. As a survivor of trauma, how am I supposed to react when a pedophile is approved for our program? I'm not going to want to help him. Of course I'm not. That's insane. I have no desire to help pedophiles. And that is a bias of mine. There is no forgiveness for harming a child. And especially in that way, there is no forgiveness in this world. And I'm willing to die on that hill, because I can't possibly think. It's the same thing with like a person who was put in prison for dogfighting or animal abuse. I can't forgive that person. What is wrong with you? Why would you think that that's okay? And now you think that it's that you're worthy of forgiveness after hurting an innocent animal? I can understand if it was a tiger attacking you and you shot it because you had to defend yourself. But there is just no world or instance where that's okay. It's just not. Got off on a little bit of a tangent. But this billing situation really screwed up a lot of things for us. And it was during that time that me and my coworkers, my other coworkers, started fighting. And I started to slip away from there, emotionally, not seeing a therapist was a really bad decision. I had broken up with my therapist, and I'll save that for another episode, maybe talking about how to do that, because not every therapist is good for you. But there is, there was so much that happened in such a short period of time. And the end result was me thinking that my partner was leaving me, so I had to break up with him. And, another part was that my coworkers were sabotaging me and trying to ruin my employment and trying to make everything difficult, which that part was true, but it was just one thing piled onto another, and it was very, very difficult to break out of that cycle. And the only way that I could think of doing anything, or think the only way that I could do anything for myself was to leave. So I started applying to other jobs. And when my mental health was really, really low, this was, about, I want to say that it was 2018, maybe 2019. My mother had been in and out of the hospital a lot. And this is not me putting my business out there, but she had been in and out of the hospital a lot. And basically, I struggled with it. I'm not ready to talk about that in depth. Maybe in the future. But I'm just not ready to talk about that. But I struggled with my mom's issues that she was going through. So much so that I cashed in all of my sick time, all of my vacation time at the crisis respite whilst trying to find another job. And so I had about 80 hours of combined vacation and sick time. So that was one of the great things about being a peer working for the company that I did, because you got all of that because they figured that you would need it. And I definitely did for that time. So I cashed all of it in. I tried to start finding other work, and I was having daily mental breakdowns, freakouts, panic attacks, all of whatever you want to call it. So much so that I was paranoid that my partner was leaving me, like I said, And I did the unthinkable, and I went through his phone to try and prove myself right. And when I couldn't find anything, even though I had realized that this had all been in my head, I continued to feel like he was going to leave me. And so I took that, and I, like I said before, I started applying to other jobs, and then I got a job closer to where my parents lived. And I got the interview was kind of easy, and I usually manipulate to some degree, I usually manipulate the person interviewing me. It's much easier to do it in person. I know that we have digital interviews these days, so it's much easier to do it in person. And I said to the person, regardless if I get this job, I'm moving to this area, and I would really like to start my life over in this area. And I really hope to start my life over with this company, or my career over with this company. And she gave me the job, and I was down at the new place of work within a week and a half. And I mean, it was the biggest mistake of my fucking life, that I had gotten my mental health so bad and so untaken. I kind of have to stop here and just say I realize how all of this sounds, and I know that it sounds like, well, you were thinking about this. The thing is, when you are a person with schizophrenia, manic depression, anxiety disorder, ADHD, when you are me and you are living in my head, you don't know what is going on until you sit back and you realize everything that has happened. And through this whole time, I was barely sleeping. I was barely showering. I didn't even realize it. I was so unhappy. I was crying every day. Didn't even realize it. You don't understand until you understand. Because seeing it in hindsight, I'm like, duh. I should have never left that job. Never. I should have done the right thing. I should have stuck it out. I should have continued my therapy. Maybe that terrible therapist was correct about some things. Maybe he was. People don't understand the value of perspective. And that is something to put on a fucking coffee mug. People don't understand the value of perspective. When you are sitting back and watching your life happen, God, it is insane. The information that you can get, and my response to all of this was just go, 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 because I couldn't stop. I had to keep going, because I wasn't going to let him break up with me, and I wasn't going to let her bully me out of the shop. I'm going to leave first. And it was just this nonstop train of crazy, and it didn't stop. So I had moved my entire life. I disrupted my entire life. I even, I left my dog up with my partner, and like, that was our shared dog, in the hopes that eventually he's going to come down and live with me. Or maybe if he gets that good paying job up there, then we're going to go back up there. But that wasn't the way that it worked. It was, we were fighting every day, and I couldn't even stand being on the phone with him for that time. I was so out of control with my mental health. I was trying to figure out what the hell is wrong in my head at the same time that things are happening. What I should have done, what the correct thing that I should have done was to kind of withdraw a little bit and go into the BSU. Possibly get on some form of therapy schedule stuff. If absolutely necessary, some holistic medication or therapy sessions, because I don't really like the chemicals in my brain. I've taken so many different medications, and one of my triggers is being told that I need to be on medication or having to take it because it doesn't make me feel human. Yeah, that was a long, long tangent. I'm going to go to break one more time. I hope that you're still hanging in there with me, and I will be back in a second. So you're listening to a podcast, right? And you're really, really into it. But doesn't it suck so much when it stops you for some 30 to like 2 minute ad? And I know what you're thinking, you know, why don't they just remove ads? Well, the thing is that like content creators like me, like many other people out there, need to make money so we can continue doing what we love to do and providing you the entertainment that you love to hear. So do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, and guess what? You can get all of my episodes 1 week before anyone else, and they're ad-free. Hear that? 1 week before everyone else and ad-free. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So just hit that subscribe button. Oh, and also, don't forget to share this with everyone. Now get back to the show. We got a lot more to talk about. And we're back. Continuing the story. Got the job. Moved in with my parents, and fighting a lot with the boyfriend, and miserable at this new job. I mean, it was nothing like I thought it was going to be. It was nothing like the work that I was doing, because now I was traveling to clients' homes, and that was something that they didn't tell me that I was doing. And one of the things, I'm readjusting myself in my chair because my back is hurting. One of the things that I had learned at the crisis respite was being comfortable in my position, having people come to us, not the other way around. And I was very uncomfortable going to other people's homes. I was spending as much money as I made on gas for my car. And I don't know if many people out there have had to do that so they could survive, but I was paying my cell phone bill, I was paying for my credit cards, and the rest of my money went to food and gas. And we're talking like $300 every 2 weeks in gas because I was doing 100-mile trips every day. It was a lot of hard work, and I was told often that I wasn't doing enough and that I didn't see enough clients and that I didn't schedule myself properly to have them to pack my schedule. I was told that I was draining company money because I wasn't creating enough billable hours for the clients to compensate for my 37 and a half hour a week paycheck, because they told me that it was 40 hours, but they only paid me for 37 and a half, which I think is a complete bullshit scam. I don't think that any company should be allowed to do that. I feel like that I have a lot of opinions on jobs. But that was one of the things that I didn't have to compromise at the other job. I didn't get breaks because anytime that we had a client or didn't have a client, our efforts were put into reaching out, doing community work, doing campaigns, and trying to get people in. And there were a lot of different things that we were doing as a community resource that this other company just didn't do. I was miserable. I was broke. I was more unhappy than I've ever been. And all the while losing control of my relationship, my partner. I mean, everything just felt so bleak. And I mean, so bleak. I had thought about killing myself a few different times while working for this new company just because I didn't see myself progressing. You know, I'd started looking into going to college when I was working for this other company. And I mean, I started looking into college when I was working for the crisis respite as well too, but I just didn't go. And I was told wrong information, so I didn't go. But then this new company, I was so unhappy, and I was just like, I really want to do something with my life, and I don't want to do this forever. And I knew then that I didn't want to do peer work forever, but I knew that I couldn't do this forever. And as soon as I brought up the idea of college, it was like instant, like, well, are you going to have time to work and go to college at the same time? So it was very discouraging. And as a person who, you know, let me backtrack a lot to here just by saying this. So I've already told you how expensive it was for me to work for this place. To keep your certification is very, very, very expensive. And when I was working for the crisis respite, they paid for my certification. And that's a lot of money. It's like $300 for your certification when I got mine. And that only lasts 2 years. Now imagine at this new company, already broke as fucking joke. I get paid, I'm broke. Like that's how it was. Literally living paycheck to paycheck, except less because I was constantly in the negative on my bank. I don't even know how I got by other than, you know, I have a credit line attached to my bank, so I was basically expending it every time I got paid. So I got, yeah, it was really miserable. And then I found out that I was going to have to pay for my certification when it renewed. And even though it wasn't for a while yet, it was still close enough. It was kind of like, I don't even know if I can do this for another 6 months. I had went to a client for one of her appointments, and this client was particularly difficult for me because I had hardened myself coming into this job quite a bit. I wasn't such an empath with these people that I was working with because I couldn't afford it. Not monetarily, but I couldn't afford it because I was so unstable myself that if I allowed the room to feel what they were feeling, I would break it. Or I would lose it. Often before and after these client visits, I would cry and freak out, like panic attacks, and grab my hair, and like it was insane things that you see in movies that, you know, you don't think that people see and people don't see, and things that you don't really like think that people do when they're in their car by themselves. But like sitting in my car and screaming at the top of my lungs, like pulling into like a Rite Aid, for example, because I wasn't allowed a lunch break, and I would pull into a Rite Aid on the way to this client's house, and I would spend like a dollar on a Slim Jim and like $3 on cashews, and that would be like my lunch, right? So I would go in, get that, and while I'm in my car, I would be eating, and I would just be sobbing uncontrollably and screaming and hitting the steering wheel and all these really dramatic things that I thought only happened in movies. And so this client, I get to her house and we start talking, and she's very, very triggered emotionally, and she has very adverse reactions to normal situations. So if she started talking about anything that was remotely important to her, she would start crying. If she talked about her mental health, she would start crying. If she talked about her family, she would start crying. We couldn't even scratch the surface of why she was crying. Like, why was that her reaction? Without her crying. It was extremely manipulative. I mean, I think that I personally, I view crying as a form of manipulation. A lot of the time when people cry in front of me, I feel like they're trying to manipulate me. And I'm not sure if that's another trauma response, or if that's just like a me thing. But I feel that for me. So I don't take crying lightly. If I hear people crying, except for my friends, maybe I often like say like, don't cry, and not like in the nice way, like, oh, don't cry. Like I say like, don't cry. But I am often the crier in a lot of situations because, I can't hold it in sometimes. And when I feel so powerful about things, or powerful, when I feel God, what is the word that I'm looking for? When I feel so impacted, maybe? No. When I feel so deeply for certain things, my emotional response is to cry. But this client's everything was just to cry. And we had this conversation, and I told her, like, we need to figure out your trigger. Why is crying your emotional response, to these situations? Because I can't be here forever to stop you from crying. You're limited to a certain amount of sessions where we have to figure out some things, but we have to make progress. we can't just keep on doing this on repeat. This had been like the fourth time that I had been to this woman's house, and she was a lovely person, and she always made me coffee, and it was a, you know, we would go for walks, and it was a great time. But we couldn't work on her mental health, which is exactly what I was there for. Well, I had made the mistake of telling my supervisor's assistant, who was also the director's assistant, about this conversation. And a mistake it was, because I had been called into my supervisor's office, and he thought that I was quitting. So the message that he delivered to me was that the assistant had told him that I was talking about leaving, and that if I was going to leave, I was going to leave them high and dry. I wouldn't tell anyone. I would just never show up. And it really got to me. It really got under my skin so hard. And my trauma response, I know that this is kind of like a hot topic word right now for this episode, but that's what this is all about. My trauma response was to stop talking. I could barely form a sentence. And all I could say was, no, stop. I don't want to be here. I felt like, even though there was a desk in between us, and like my supervisor was a small guy, I could probably take him out one hand tied behind my back and like one of my legs cut off. Like, he was a small guy. But I felt so attacked at the time and so panicked. It's really hard to even think about it and try and think of everything that happened in such a short time period. I was off the clock, and I know that for sure because I had just clocked out when he had called me. But it was like anything that I've ever felt before. Well, up until that point, it was like anything that I had felt before, because I had never been so helpless. Maybe that's the word. It's really even hard to describe now, and I'm sorry that I'm having such an issue describing that. But in the end, I left the office, and I didn't go back. At this time, my partner had finally moved down in with my parents with me, and everything was really, really good until I got home. I called him, of course, and we had talked about what had happened, and I just told him, I can't do this. I can't do it. If I go back in there, it's going to kill me. Like, I cannot do this. I don't want to do this. I'm so unhappy. I can find another job. I don't even care anymore. I will max out my credit cards. I will do anything that I can to stop this, because I'm so miserable, and I can't face these people. And I don't think that he was understanding, but let me rephrase that. I don't think that he understood entirely what was going on, but I think that he was understanding to the point where it was okay for me to quit because I was so unhappy. Before I even went into the house that day, I already started applying for other jobs. And I ghosted my employer for an entire week before they were able to get a hold of me. I blocked their number. I mean, they were contacting my emergency contact, which was my partner, which is my partner. And it was so, the experience of everything was so surreal and crazy because I don't think that people realize how quick life happens. And especially when things are bad. Life, it is the single longest experience that you will ever experience. But when bad shit happens, it seems so slow at the time, but like everything happens so fucking fast. And there's not enough time. I mean, in life, there's not enough time for me to explain everything that happens like that. But there's a reason why we have podcasts like this, so we can talk about it. We can have conversations with our therapists, and we can talk with our friends and family about trauma response and trauma in general. With all of that, however, being said, I went over. And I'm needing to take a break, but I will be right back. So you're listening to a podcast, right? And you're really, really into it. But doesn't it suck so much when it stops you for some 30 to like 2 minute ad? And I know what you're thinking, why don't they just remove ads? Well, the thing is that like, content creators like me, like many other people out there, need to make money so we can continue doing what we love to do and providing you the entertainment that you love to hear. So, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, and guess what? You can get all of my episodes 1 week before anyone else, and they're ad-free. Hear that? 1 week before everyone else, and ad-free. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So just hit that subscribe button. Oh, and also, don't forget to share this with everyone. Now get back to the show. We got a lot more to talk about. And we are back, and we are still talking about trauma response. We are still talking about job trauma, job-related trauma. A topic that's really not talked about very often because we're told at such a young age, when we start working, I mean, you can start working at what, 15 now, 16 now? I mean, when I was a kid, you could start working at 16, and I didn't even have my first job until I was in my 20s. My first real job, that is. First long-term job, let's say that. Because technically, I guess I had two jobs prior. But we're still talking about trauma response and trauma with the workplace. And why don't we talk about this more? Why is it so frowned upon, really? And I would really, really like to delve into those questions in the future. But like, for now, episode one, we can't really dive too far deep into that. But I would really like to know people's thoughts on why we can't talk about workplace trauma. you know, people making you feel so helpless and pitiful and like you have no other choice. I mean, they talk about it in sexual harassment trainings and harassment trainings. People don't talk about mental health in the workplace because there's this obscure idea, a really hated idea. Personally, I fucking hate it. I think it's disgusting that you're supposed to go to work and be this robot and you're just supposed to do things and not exist basically outside of this cookie cut of a worker. I find that very disgusting. I find it extremely disgusting. We are allowed to be flawed human beings. We are allowed to cry at work. We're allowed to feel sad. We're allowed to feel bad. We're allowed to make mistakes. And the things that, you know, this employer, this division was all about mental health. It was about peer work. It was about, like, they knew going in that I had mental health disorders. They knew everything. I was very, very open with my employer. As a person, this is also very important for anyone who is listening. I've said this on my TikTok as well, but I'm going to say this now. Again, I mean, for anyone out there, if you are handed that little piece of paper that you are handed in New York, every job in New York has you sign this piece of paper. If it's a legitimate, real job, it talks about disabilities. And it's the New York Disabilities Act paper where it acknowledges or does not acknowledge that you have a disability. If you have a mental health disability, you sign that paper. Do not consider your pride. Do not consider anything else. It has nothing to do with pride. This is for your safety. This is very, very important for everyone to sign. I mean, even, you know, you can, maybe it's not advisable for me to say, even if you don't have a disorder, to sign it, but I mean, shit, you have to sign it if you have diabetes. There's so many things that your employers need to know. And they knew this. I was a peer and I signed that piece of paper. I had talked with them in depth about the schizophrenia, about the anxiety, about the depression, about the PTSD, you know, the night terrors, insomnia, like all of these different things that I've dealt with my entire life that in some ways, yes, have helped other people. When I share my experience, it can help other people because there are things that I still struggle with that I get through every day. And what is the goal but to get to the next day? But these people knew. And then they put me in a situation where I felt trapped and helpless and pitiful and like the scum of the earth. And I thought it was right to do exactly what the assistant had delivered to my supervisor, which what she said that I would leave them high and dry. And so I did. Only because of that. Only because of that. Prior to going in there, prior to that conversation happening, I wasn't thinking about quitting. I mean, not yet. I wouldn't have quit without another opportunity lined up. I'm not that type of person. I'm not going to do that. I mean, I would definitely leave the job without notice if I had another opportunity because I don't believe in 2-week notices. Like, plain and simple, if a job can fire you on the spot, then I can leave on the spot. And I don't have to give my 2 weeks notice because I don't have to abide by a ridiculous rule that's nowhere. You know, it's not a law, you know. But yeah, I left that employer. They wanted me to go in to get my last paycheck because they refused to mail it. They wanted me to go in to get the remainder of my things because they wouldn't mail it. And that was that. Really, it was a really awful experience, and my mental health and my trauma response altogether had been so severe that it had left me almost without a relationship currently. Well, not like currently now, but like at the time, without a job. If I wasn't living with my parents, I mean, it would have left me homeless. But that's why it's so important to take care of yourself and to know your limits when you're up here. We do a lot for the people who we work with, but knowing your limits can mean the difference between you being at your job one day and the next day being 2.5 hours away, and jobless. There's so much, there's a lot of details that I'm not putting in this that really broaden the story quite a bit. Because what this is all making it sound like is this all happened over one day. But this had been weeks of minute things, people trying to ruin my employment prior to this incident. One of these people had been a coworker, who had delivered to my clients because when you're a peer and you worked at this company, you could deliver certain Medicaid services. So one of them might be education. So she was able to deliver that service, and because we had crossed over at points, she was able to deliver the education service to one of my clients. During those parts, they would talk about what I do with that client, and the client would then deliver to me things that she had said about me, and it put me in a very bad position multiple times. One of these times, a client had called me when I wasn't working and said that the reason why I continue to see this person is because they were told that I was trying to make them gay and so we can be in a relationship together. To which she didn't receive any punishment for. And then there was another client who had made it very difficult to have a relationship at all, because she wasn't liked very much by this other client. And he would often spend time talking about her and what she did when they were hanging out. It was a lot of that, but then there was one time where a client confronted me about something that I didn't say, but he had said that I said it to my coworker, and that was that I said his house was fucking disgusting, and I cannot be his peer if he didn't shower and clean up his home. These complaints got so out of control, and when I went, because I don't like to be that person, like ever, but when I went to my employer, when I went to my supervisor, and I tried telling them what was going on, they just brushed it off like it was no big deal. And I said, this affects my clients in my own relationship. This is a peer to client relationship that's really screwed up, and I don't think that I'm going to be able to see them because it's becoming so tumultuous. And there were five clients that we had crossed over with. One of them, the client had been very new. The client did not like my coworker at all. She thought that she had a very bad attitude. She's very pushy. The client thought that my coworker had no idea how to do her job and how to empathize. And it was a lot of complaints. The coworker then came to me and told me that the client didn't want to see me because I'm gay and she doesn't want that in her home. When I told my supervisor this, I was advised to talk with the client during our next appointment. And to say that the conversation was uncomfortable, because not only was the information not true, she decided during that visit that she didn't want to see the coworker anymore. She had responded, "Of course I don't have an issue with you being gay. I have gay grandchildren. I have gay aunts, and or I had gay aunts, and I had a gay sister." And like she was talking about all these gay people who she had in her life, So she didn't have an issue, but it was delivered to make the situation uncomfortable. And the last client that she was saying these things with or about, she had said that the father didn't want me around his kid because I'm gay. And because it's such a, she had said to me, because it's such a huge part of my life and my identity to be open and out and proud, that it would be best that I didn't see that client anymore. And after all of these complaints and after all these things being said, and going to my supervisor, not a single thing was done. And that in lies the problem with peer work and trauma response, and maybe my trauma response, as well as expecting things to be done about being treated badly at work. Maybe I have an unrealistic expectation that things will be handled. I don't want to see things be done. I want to see improvement. And that's a really big issue for a lot of employers, is that they don't want to enforce when they should. And so now I was leading up to that point, there had been so many issues, and I had only been there for a few months. You know, it wasn't, it was immediate that the problem started happening. And it was so quick, everything that had happened, and so little had been done about anything. And it's not, it didn't even take me working there. It didn't even take me working there. I mean, when I left and when I got a new job and I sat back and I realized, oh, my problems still exist. And then I'm still not happy. And it didn't take me until then that I realized that I had no idea mentally what was going on with that coworker of mine. I had no idea. I couldn't put myself in her shoes at all. We didn't have a shared experience. Why was she causing all these problems with me? Why do people constantly do this at any job that I'm at? Why do people always seem to do this? And it kind of hit like a switch a little bit. That I can't control what other people think of me. And what other people think of me is none of my fucking business. There's only so much care that you can give a person. If their priority isn't to heal, you cannot help. I mean, there are so many lessons in peer work, but there's so much disadvantage and illusion about that type of work that I don't think that a lot of people are ready to understand. If you are a peer, I mean, if you are a peer and you are able to do the job and you are good at what you do and you see a therapist and you're happy and you're actually happy and not the fake happy that a lot of these workers put on, I mean, congratulations. I mean, you have found the career for your life, and I hope that you help a lot of people. But there are a lot of narcissists in this industry. And there are a lot of evil people and hurtful people. There are people who only want to hurt other people. There are people who feel good about hurting other people. And it's important for me to say this at the end of this podcast episode. I want to say more than ever, always create your boundaries, enforce them, be careful who you share with, be careful about how you're sharing, be careful about what you share. If it is not relevant, do not share it. Understand your trauma response. Understand when things become too much for you to handle. Live on the side of caution. If you don't think that it's going to help, don't say it. Allow people the room to speak. Do not interrupt people. Let them talk. I really hope that this has been an informative podcast episode. I know that a lot of this had seemed like rambling, but I hope that I was able to give a in-depth story of my experience working as a peer and my trauma response as a result of working as a peer. I really hope that someone can take away something from this. Oh, sorry. I like a hiccup. But I really hope that someone can take away a part of this and make something amazing of your career. If you are in the mental health industry, maybe you're just a person who wants to learn about it, or learn how to deal with some things, always do your research. There's an amazing YouTube channel called Med Circle. They do this amazing newsletter. They have video series. I mean, they are the number one, in my opinion, they're the number one resource on mental health. So, and this is not an advertisement for them, or this is really only a plug because I use them, and I think that a lot of other people should. Even if you have like a troubled child or something, you should, because it's important. Your mental health is most important, as well as the mental health of your loved ones. So with all of that, I am so thankful that I was able to start this podcast over with a new side of things. I'm really happy with this episode, and I really hope to continue kind of this trend of mental health and things like this, and things that I think can really help people. I just want to share my experience, and I just want to help people. I want to make people feel good. There's really not enough of it. But thank you for listening. Subscribe to wherever your podcasts are and read. Jesus. Write a review of the podcast wherever you are listening to it. And I will talk to you in the next one. Bye. So you listened to the podcast, and I'm super happy that you stuck around through the whole thing, even through the ads. But just remember that if you want to be extra supportive towards the podcast, you can always hit subscribe. There is no commitment here. And you can get every episode 1 week early and also ad-free. Ad-free, 1 week early.